It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. Gina Baker is here. She is a dispatch supervisor with Garfield County 911. First time ever for anybody from dispatch to be on the program. So
yes,
that's kind of cool.
Very.
And so we'll talk a lot about, you know, dispatchers are kind of where the rubber meets the road with public safety. The police and fire and other public safety agencies, they're obviously a little bit more visible. Anytime there's a major event going on, well, anytime there's not a major event going on, there is a dispatcher that is trying to keep everything as calm and as organized as possible.
Absolutely.
So you may not be the most visible, but definitely a very important part of the public safety process.
Absolutely. 24/7, 365. There are at least three people sitting there waiting for that next call and making sure that the officers and the fire department and the medics out on the road have what they need and know what they need to know before they get to places. And
dispatch, Garfield County dispatch in particular, just like any number of commercial or corporate entities, has seen its own consolidation over the years. Up until the mid-90s, we had three dispatches in Garfield County. We had Parachute, we had Rifle, and we had Glenwood. That was all consolidated into the Garfield County Communication Center. What, mid-90s sometime?
Yeah, somewhere mid to late 90s, somewhere in there, yeah.
And obviously, you know, economies of scale could be a justification for that. And since that time, I would say that there's at least one taxing question. I know that there was a 911 surcharge for a while to upgrade equipment and that kind of thing. You know, I know you do a lot of stuff at dispatch, but just from the 911 side, boy, technology has changed the game.
Oh, my goodness. It has changed so much. You know, we've gone from taking calls on paper and, you know, moving on to computerized dispatch systems. And then even those have changed dramatically. Last year, we upgraded our computerized dispatch system as well as our phone system. We can take text to 911 for situations where people aren't able to make phone calls.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew that Pitkin County 911 could, because there's actually been a couple times where there were backcountry rescues where there was not enough signal for an actual voice call, but there was enough to get data through.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can take text messages for things like that. It's fantastic for lost hunters. In the winter, we can help snowmobilers, people that are out in the backcountry, but also for those situations where it's not safe for someone to make a voice call, they can still reach out to us and we can take that information and communicate back and forth with them.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and back in the day, you're talking about paper and you didn't have the same type of location-based services that you do now.
Certainly not. these days, there's so much, I mean, even litigation and legal jargon and stuff about making sure that cell phone companies are able to provide us accurate information for people. It's amazing how many apps are out there that can pinpoint exactly where you are. And I mean, we could follow you as you walk through a building and we'd know exactly what part of the building you were in. There's even apps out there where they can tell how high you are off the ground if you're in a multi-story building. But cell phone technology has not reached that point yet. So that is coming, certainly. And then there's also the whole push for next-gen 911, which will provide even more information to us, the ability to take photos and video. And there's centers out there that are, you know, beta testing, being able to essentially FaceTime with a 911 dispatcher so you can see what's happening in real time.
Oh, that adds to the trauma.
Yeah.
As if it's not a stressful job enough.
Yeah, I mean, the phone calls, we train our people to build a mental picture of what's going on scene so that we can ask better questions and really prepare the responders when they get there. I'm not so sure that I'm excited about actually seeing it, though.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It was Britt McClinn, the former Silt Fire chief, who once told me, I wish I could remember exactly the way he put it, something along the lines of the fact that dispatchers are kind of the unsung heroes. And he said, even we in the field sometimes forget how important they are, because obviously in a small town, you know most of the people you're talking to at the other end of the radio, and when they don't answer you in a timely manner, you can get kind of concerned.
Oh, absolutely. We consider all of our first responders family. Mm-hmm. We are a family within the dispatch center, and then we have our extended family on the outside, on the other side of the radios. And as much as we care about the community, I mean, they are our top priority. So when we have those moments of they're not responding to us on the radio, they're not answering a status check, whatever the case may be, certainly worst case scenarios start running through our mind, and everybody, you can feel the tension in the room raise a little bit, and everybody kind of gears up for that what if scenario and gets ready to step in and do their part.
Now, you're actually taking applications. You're looking to fill a position at dispatch.
We are. We have one open position, and applications are all done online through our website, which is www.garco911.org, garco911.org. And if you click on the jobs tab, it'll redirect you to the page to apply. We only have one open position right now. We do have three people in training. And applications are accepted through May 25th.
Three people in training is probably quite a bit for you, I imagine. Well, because your onboarding process takes 6 months, right?
We have shortened our hiring process quite a bit. But the training process, yes, it takes between 5 and 6 months once you've actually started. So it can be a very drawn-out process. But we've actually figured out how we can utilize people and give them the opportunity to work independently kind of throughout that process so that they can help cover things on the floor. They can build some confidence and feel like a part of the team because they're really serving a purpose. They're not sitting around feeling like, I want to help, but I don't know how to yet.
So it may not be one of those situations where it actually takes 6 months to learn the job. The breadth of things that may happen while on the job, it takes 6 months maybe to be exposed to each one of those specific types of like calls or, and by calls, I mean 911 calls or calls for service or so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the training program is broken up. We do the first 2 weeks is really intense geography. It's really important that people have an understanding of how the county is laid out. Some of the really important county roads that we tend to take calls on where there's a lot of traffic, understanding how mile markers work on all of the highways that run through the county, things like that, as well as obviously jurisdictional boundaries so that we know who to dispatch. And then we spend about 8 weeks after that doing just call taking. So you learn how to take non-emergent calls. Then we transition into 911 calls. In that process, you also go out for a 3 to 4 day emergency medical dispatch training that's done out in by an instructor outside of the agency. And that is a certification.
Now, is this what I, forgive me, my experience in dispatch revolves mostly around, you know, TV. so I remember on Rescue 911 when it was popular back in the 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I believe that what you're talking about had just become a thing. Is this where you actually train your dispatchers with some minimal medical knowledge so that they can help walk someone through the phone, for instance, through CPR or something like that, those lines?
That's exactly what it is. Okay. You see it on TV a lot today. There are still a lot of agencies nationwide that don't offer it as a service, but we do. We have for a long time.
Well, it makes sense. You know, if you can keep somebody alive for 5 minutes until the ambulance can get there.
Absolutely.
It makes absolute sense to me. And how long is that training?
So the training itself is only a couple of days. And then you take a test to receive your certification. And then we have to do continuing education over the course of 2 years. And we have to recertify every 2 years. And then once you're certified, we have quality assurance that's done on a regular basis. So everybody gets random phone calls pulled and checked for accuracy, compliance to protocols, things like that.
Wow. That's intense.
It is.
I'm not going to lie. I'm getting chills just thinking about having to go through that process. And I'm sure that you teach your dispatchers this, you know, just about kind of taking a step back and dissociating yourself from the experience while still remaining professional and trying to be a resource for the person on the other end of the radio call or telephone call.
Absolutely. And it's easy to become overly involved, especially in those intense situations, or heaven forbid, if it is someone that you know. It's hard to separate yourself from that a little bit sometimes, but we encourage people to take breaks. We do a lot of internal debriefing. We talk a lot after intense calls about how it went, things that went well, things we can do better next time, as well as just kind of mental check-ins with each other on a regular basis.
Again, you can learn more about Garfield County Dispatch at garco911.org. If you're interested in applying, in joining their ranks, just click on jobs. Again, the current position that's open, they're taking applications through May 25th.
Absolutely.
A quick break. We'll come back and visit a little bit more with Gina. A fascinating conversation, by the way. When I heard that you had scheduled this interview, I was so excited. It's like, awesome. That's, you know, something new and different, and it's something I'm interested in. So it helps.
Thank you so much.
Back in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again this afternoon, we're talking with Gina Baker from Garfield County Dispatch. What is the proper name of the organization? Is it the Garfield County Emergency Communications Authority?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. So I got that one right. I will give myself a pat on the back for that. Would you walk us through the typical 911 call? Again, you mentioned in dispatch at any time you have three dispatchers, right?
At least, yeah.
And at least one supervisor as well?
Usually, unless they're gone at training or on vacation or something like that, in okay. which case we have our CTOs, our trainers, will step in and serve as an acting supervisor.
Okay.
Depending on the time of day, our minimum staffing will be anywhere from 3 to 4, and we usually try to staff more than that, so in the middle of the day during peak hours, we might have 5 or sometimes even 6 dispatchers working.
Okay. So say those folks are sitting around at dispatch, maybe having a conversation about dinner last night. Phone rings. I'm sure that there's probably a distinction in ringtone between 911 and other non-emergency calls.
Definitely.
It is a 911 call. What happens at that point?
So the first person will pick up the call. We call them the call taker, and we usually during the day will have a dedicated call taker, and that is their primary job. We answer all of our calls within 2 rings, which keeps us within the standard, the accepted industry standard of 10 seconds. We do a really exceptional job at that. So the first person will pick up the call. They ask, the first question will always be location, because without your location, there's no call. If we know where you are, even if we know nothing else, we can send help. We'll just send everybody.
Right.
So they'll ask for your location. They will always ask you to verify it. It's not because we didn't hear you. It's because we want to make sure we got it right.
And even if the location comes up on your E911 screen,
yes,
you'll still verify that verbally.
Always, always, especially if it's a cell phone, because it doesn't give us an exact location.
And in this day and age with voice over IP technology, you can take that same phone and move to a different address, but sometimes that address doesn't get updated in the database.
Absolutely. We've had people who've moved out of state and they call 911 and they get us.
We actually had a former employee that accidentally called 911 and they ended up going to, I think it was Aurora.
Yes. Yep.
And yeah, so that was rather interesting. And so just one of those learning experiences. And I think that was more of an internal porting thing with the phone company as opposed to not the right address. They had the right address. Just for some reason, 911 was routed. Because think about it, 911 is a universal number. It has to go to the right place from your phone.
Absolutely, yeah. And the voiceover internet can really throw a problem because that's not based on location.
Right.
It's based on the address associated with the billing of the account, just like any other landline phone. So even if it's a landline and it gives us an address, we're going to ask you to verify it. The other issue there is you might be calling from house A, but the emergency is next door at house B.
Right.
So that the address we get may not be correct.
Okay. So let's assume that this is something serious. Okay. I'm not going to get any more specific than that because that could mean a lot of different things.
Right.
At the point that the call taker realizes this is a very serious 911 call that's going to require a serious response from public safety agencies, what happens at that point?
So from there, depending on whether or not it's a medical call or a law enforcement call, we've got dispatchers that are separated onto individualized channels. So we will have one person who's responsible for the fire channel, and they dispatch for all of the fire agencies in the county. If it's requiring a fire truck or an ambulance, if there's a hazmat incident, anything like that, they will page that out and get people started. And then as soon as that's done, law enforcement is also notified. We have two law enforcement radios so that we don't have everybody on the same channel trying to talk at the same time. And so the dispatcher responsible for the appropriate channel will get law enforcement headed that way. And our requirement is that calls be dispatched within 2 minutes of the call coming in, which is usually, not always, but usually more than enough time to figure out what kind of response is needed.
So you've got 2 minutes to gather information from the caller and then get everybody sent out to that location.
Exactly. And it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes there's things that come up that just make it so it's not able to be done that fast. One of the big ones is translation services. Mm. We do offer translation services so that we can make sure we maximize that ability to communicate with anybody in the community.
Is that through a third party?
It is. Okay. And so that can cause a little bit of delay just in having to go back and forth between the translator. But as soon as we know what kind of a response it needs, they're getting help sent that way. So we pride ourselves that we meet that overwhelmingly.
I'm going to make this more complicated for you now.
Okay.
Not only is this a mass casualty incident of some kind, which I didn't say before, but I did now.
It's okay.
It is a major incident which requires multiple jurisdictions to be advised, including those not in Garfield County.
Absolutely. So
I'm talking State Patrol. I'm talking, you know, BLM, Forest Service Firefighters, or Upper Colorado. Who else might we get involved with this? But you get the idea.
Absolutely. So we've got one person on the line taking the phone call. We've got our fire and our law dispatchers talking to our resources. And they, at the same time, if there isn't another person available, will also be making those outside phone calls and passing on that information to other resources that we may need to pull in. If it's something that large, we're also going to be communicating with our emergency manager for the county who can help with pulling in those resources for us. So we have assistance with things there. If it's going to be something that's long and delayed, we may call in more dispatchers to help manage just the level of work that needs to be done. But in my 10 and a half years, we have not actually done that.
Knock on wood.
Crossing fingers.
So you know where I'm going with this. I recall reading an article somewhere about Pitkin County last summer during the Lake Christine fire.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember the volume of calls. Was it something like 1,500 calls within an hour or two?
Yeah, they got absolutely inundated, and that happens here on occasion. Not necessarily the same numbers, but when you compare personnel on shift to call volumes,
right?
You know, we can have that happen as well. And we took a lot of phone calls as well with the Lake Christine, especially once we were initiating evacuations that were in Garfield County. There was definitely an uptick in our workload as well. So that happens. Accidents on the interstate, everybody has a cell phone. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of calls, and you know, we encourage people to call. If you see something, say something, call, because you never know, you might be the person who has that key piece of information that we didn't get.
Right. It actually very similar to what I always say. I always say, always assume nobody else has called.
Yeah.
You know, anytime they call us, because you know we talk a lot about accidents. Obviously, I can't help in the way you can. but we like to let folks know about those in the morning and afternoon as well. Again, if you'd like to learn more about Garfield County Dispatch, you can go to garco911.org. Plus, the last few years, there's been this big push to sign up for the emergency alerts.
Yes.
This is kind of, but not exactly reverse 911.
Right. I mean, we're not allowed to call it reverse 911. So we call it a reverse emergency notifications. And it is done through our website. You go to the same website, there's a button that says emergency notifications. And please, if you are not signed up for it, please do. If you don't have a landline phone in your house, this is the only way that we're going to get to you in an emergency that affects your address. So go on there. It does not take more than a couple of minutes to sign up. It'll ask for two delivery methods. You can have it set to text and voice call or text and email. There are some community opt-ins that you can choose to receive, like major road closures. If I-70 gets closed, we send out a message saying that it's closed and when it's open again. We do send out air quality alert information for people that may have, you know, breathing problems that might want that information, as well as fire and crime alerts. And we are using it more and more.
Everybody uses those alerts a little bit differently. Yes. Speaking from someone that signed up, obviously, for a lot of them. Right. It's everybody has a little bit different mission. And so each public safety organization uses them a little bit different based on what their ultimate mission is.
Right.
Again, GARCO911.org. And again, if you're interested in an exciting new field, maybe being a dispatcher is right for you. You know what? Let's get into that in the next segment. we'll save that till the next time. But I've got some good questions I want to ask about just who should consider becoming a dispatcher.
Okay.
Back in just a minute for some final thoughts. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking with Gina Baker. She is a dispatch supervisor for Garfield County, the Garfield County Emergency Communications Authority, to be specific. You can just call them dispatch, as the public safety folks would.
Yes.
Again, looking for your to fill one new position. Applications are open through May 25th. Obviously, details are available on the website, garco911.org. What are you looking for? Are you looking for, do you have an application there? Are you looking for a cover letter and a resume?
Online, it does have an application that you'll fill out that asks all of the normal questions from an application. From that point, we review it. There is a questionnaire that asks some specific things about our profession, things like, are you willing to work 12-hour shifts? Are you willing to work weekends, night shift, holidays? We don't have the luxury of being able to not be there on Christmas Day.
Right. Even so, as a supervisor, do you work all those shifts, by the way?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, okay. Yep, we stick it out with the troops, and we don't ask them to do anything that we aren't willing to do ourselves. So
I appreciate that.
Yes. We have an amazing team. We really do. Our big focus is making sure that we find someone who's the right fit with the team. We can teach the skills. So we're looking for someone who really has a drive to serve and maybe feels called to emergency services or serving the community.
Are there any physical requirements, mental requirements? Will you do like specific testing to make sure? Obviously, there's a background check that's involved, I would assume.
Yeah, so the application review, we go through, make sure that everything meets the basic needs. And then from there, we do a background check, an initial background check, which is basically a criminal history screening. Yeah. We obviously can't hire anyone who has a felony or things like that. So we do that. And then from there, everybody who passes that portion is sent the opportunity to sign up for testing. And we have just introduced doing the Wunderlich test for cognitive abilities. And then that is combined with a test called Critical. And that is an actual skills assessment where it gives us an idea of how fast you type, how accurately, your multitasking ability, things like that.
This reminds me of Star Trek III when Spock was retraining his brain and he was answering, remember?
Yes.
Three different questions at the same time. Okay, I appreciate that. You passed that test. Congratulations.
Woo!
Is there, for someone who's going to be a dispatcher for Garfield County, is there a minimum response time? For instance, if you're going to work for most of the police departments, I believe they say minimum response time of or maximum response time, I should say, of 30 minutes.
We do not.
Okay.
So we actually have most of our staff live either in Rifle or Parachute, But we do have one employee who chooses to commute from Grand Junction. So she lives in Grand Junction so she can be close to family. And then she commutes up here for her shifts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What is the starting pay for this new position?
Our starting pay is $19.86 an hour for lateral employees with dispatch experience that may start a little bit higher. And then throughout the training process, as different skills are learned and able to be used independently on the dispatch floor, there are little increases. So when you get checked out of call taking and you're able to take phones on your own independently, there's a little bit of a pay increase, fire radios. And then, of course, at the end of training, law radios. And then when you're out of probation, the proficient dispatcher pay is $25 an hour.
Okay, that's quite a bump from starting pay to, but again, it is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it's a competitive wage for the industry and for our area. So we are in a small valley, so we do, you know, try our best to make sure that we're providing a livable wage and being competitive with the agencies around us.
Benefits?
Fantastic benefits. We provide medical, dental, and vision, and it's paid 100% for the employee. And then the employee pays a small portion if they want to add spouses or family. And of course, we have access to things like AFLAC with short-term disability and all of those kinds of things. I have two kids, so I take full advantage of AFLAC. The accident rider is my friend.
It's great insurance, isn't it?
It is.
Actually, our agent would say it's not insurance, but it is.
Yeah, it is. And then we have a 401k retirement plan. Every employee is required to put in 5%, and that's matched 100% by the agency. And then, of course, you have the option to add additional plans if you want to put more of your own money in.
Okay. Is there a typing minimum, like a word per minute requirement?
It's roughly 30 words per minute.
That's not bad.
No, okay. It's very average. And, you know, I will say 30 words per minute is not enough to really truly be proficient when we're busy. But again, that's a skill. That's something we can teach and we can improve on through practice throughout the training process. So don't let typing skills necessarily be something that keeps you from applying.
Do you have any paper in dispatch at all? I mean, pens and paper.
Of course. You
mentioned that you went, you know, paperless as far as call taking and stuff like that. Do computers go down? Do you sometimes need to get creative?
Oh my goodness. Yes. I mean, that is our worst nightmare.
That is so good to hear because we all have those moments.
Absolutely. Everything has the potential to go down. So we do still have the paper cards. And when our CAD system, the computer system for dispatching calls goes down, that is how we keep track of the calls that people are on and how we take new calls.
Are they still the yellow cards? Like
they are not.
3 inches wide? And okay.
They're probably 4 inches wide and about 8 inches tall, but they're white now.
Okay.
And
you remember what I'm talking about, though.
I've seen them.
Okay.
They were pre my time in dispatch, but I have seen them. Because our administrative assistant had to go through and scan them all in so that we would have a record of them. So she spent a long time doing that some years ago. But yeah, we do absolutely have paper and pens. And I mean, if the computer system is working, that is where things need to go for the sake of efficiency. But some people prefer to take notes or they want to jot down things they want to go back and look at later. So of course that's there. And then, you know, we've had to be creative with some workarounds when there was the issue with the wireless internet or the fiber cable that was cut and internet in the area was down for 2 or 3 days. I mean, we can't function without the internet. That's our connection to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation for running information for officers. So our systems administrator got really creative and figured out how to get us one laptop with a wireless card so that at least one of us could run those things. And, you know, we were creative and we come up with solutions. That's our job, is to be problem solvers.
Making it happen.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. You said for people who may be interested in applying for a job, and by the way, other jobs may come available at dispatch over time. So
absolutely.
Continue to check back if it's something that you're interested in. Before I get to the question I was going to ask, are there jobs in dispatch that are not necessarily the primary position. Obviously, what you do is dispatch. So right. you're answering calls, you're entering information in the computer, you're sending out public safety agencies. Are there other jobs that come available from time to time, like administrative jobs and stuff like that?
We have 5 administrative positions at dispatch. They do not come available very often.
I was going to say, Carl and Brian are not going anywhere. I know that.
Yeah, so Carl is our executive director, and then we have Tom, who's our operations manager. We have an executive administrative assistant who kind of helps and serves all of us. And then we have one systems administrator. He handles all of our IT stuff, our computers, making sure everything's up and running. And then we have a radio operations manager, and he keeps everything related to radios up and running efficiently. So
you mentioned earlier that you wouldn't be concerned about the typing skills being a disqualifying factor for prospective applicants. What would you consider to be disqualifying factors for anybody that may be curious? Obviously, a felony record would be one that would be an automatic thing.
Yeah, I mean, other than things on your criminal history, the biggest thing is schedule. Mm. We are fully committed to
it
what we're
shift
doing.
Work.
It is shift work. Our core shifts are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then depending on the workload and the staffing, there are other shift options that'll be run anywhere between 9 a.m., 9 p.m., 11 a.m., 11 p.m., 1 p.m., 1 a.m., and 3 p.m. and 3 a.m. But those are rotating. We change shifts every 3 months.
And is that so that you don't have everybody coming in at the same time and everybody leaving at the same time, so that it's more staggered?
Yeah, and it helps with call volume, because during the summer, we tend to be busier later in the evening, but there's no reason to have 5 people working between 3 and 7 a.m. when call volume just tapers off. So we'll have someone who comes in at 3 and goes home at 3. So we try to kind of match those extra bodies to the hours that historically are our busiest. But it is 12-hour shifts. The beauty of that is you get a 4-day weekend every other week. And who doesn't like a 4-day weekend?
No, that does not suck.
I mean, we have paid holidays. We get 10 paid holidays a year, whether you work it or not. So, yeah, you might have to work Christmas, but you're going to get paid 24 hours to do it. I tell our people holidays are really just a date on a calendar, and it's more about the time you spend with your family. And the more time you spend in a profession like this, the more you realize that.
How many years for you, by the way, Gina?
I am 10 and a half. I just had my 10-year anniversary last November.
All of that at Garfield County?
All of it, yes.
Okay. Might that have something to do with your personal romantic situation?
Yeah. My husband absolutely was the one who said, you should apply to be a dispatcher. I was, so I worked for a different company in a call center in Grand Junction. And shortly after we got married, we realized that me working banker's hours and him working shift work was just not convenient. Mm-hmm. So he said, dispatch is hiring and it's a call center. So I applied.
A little bit different context, though, it sounds like.
A little bit different. I've never been so grateful, because I made it about 6 weeks into training and I was absolutely hooked. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, so it satisfies that. There's something different all the time. 10 years and no 2 calls are the same.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you find that you work better when there's a little bit of an edge?
Absolutely.
Like, and by better, I mean more efficiently with more purpose.
Absolutely. I tell people my favorite part of being a supervisor is when everything hits the fan and I get to kind of sit back and watch my team work, because it is amazing what our people can do when everything's going crazy. And I mean, they just come together like a well-oiled machine. Everybody knows what they're expected to do. They're backing up their partners. Nobody's working by themselves, and everything gets done.
And you, as the supervisor, are ready to step in at any moment if you need to help out in any of the capacities.
Absolutely. Sometimes we have to move things onto another channel and we don't have enough people to cover that. So the supervisor sometimes will take that or take the primary channel. We try to let our people have the fun. So, you know, if it's a good call and we're moving it to another channel, then they get to keep that and we'll take the primary channel. But our job is really to sit back and kind of observe from that global view and make sure that everybody has what they need. We will be the ones who jump in and say, hey, I'll make that phone call for you. I'll get that tow. I'll call the hospital. I'll call CareFlight, whatever it is that needs to happen.
That's one question I did not ask you that I intended to earlier. I kind of, I think I decided to hold on to it until later. List the agencies that... Because I don't want to say that you interact with, because that would be, well, basically everybody.
Yeah.
But the agencies that you dispatch on a daily basis.
Okay.
So just take it from there.
We call them our user agencies. And from a law enforcement perspective, there's 7 of them. We have the Sheriff's Office here in Garfield County, Parachute Police Department, Rifle Police Department, Silt Police Department, Newcastle, Glenwood, and Carbondale. And then for fire and EMS services that we talk to every day, we have Grand Valley Fire, Colorado River Fire Rescue, the Glenwood Springs Fire Department, and the Carbondale Fire Department. And then
which Carbondale is kind of interesting because you share dispatch services with Pickett County since their district kind of straddles the two.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's a lot of mutual aid done in that area specifically. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of areas that are in Garfield County, but if we page Carbondale, we automatically call Pitkin and let them know that they need to also send basalt. And it has to do with response times. Mm. Pitkin County can actually page Carbondale out directly. So every once in a while, they'll come over our fire channel and we copy the page and we go over, we didn't page you. you know, and they say, oh, sorry, it was Pitkin, and they switch channels. And, you know, they go off and respond to the Pitkin County call. So I know a lot of the departments throughout the county are working on putting together some mutual aid areas that will be everywhere from DeBec all the way up through Highway 82 outside of Garfield County. So
first time I heard about an actual mutual aid agreement, I think was it after the Storm King fire? Was it after 9/11? I don't know, but it, I think always was more of a handshake thing. And then after some big event in the past, it became more of a, you know, we should probably put that in writing.
Yeah.
So you were listing all these agencies, and I kind of interrupted you. So you mentioned the police agencies and mm-hmm. the fire, and who else?
You know, other agencies that we interact with on a pretty regular basis would be utility companies. We do a lot of communication between the fire department and utility companies when they need to respond.
Sure.
Road and bridge, especially this time of year when mm. everything's melting and thawing.
You bet.
CDOT, State Patrol, obviously. We talk to their dispatch center, and their troopers have the ability to get on our channel and talk directly with us. So we do a lot of communicating with them. Our surrounding counties, we communicate with their dispatch centers pretty frequently.
Search and rescue.
Search and rescue.
Search and rescue.
Yes, hunting season and snowmobiling season. We talk to a search and rescue quite a bit.
Sure, absolutely. Gina, this was eye-opening. It's really, you know, like I say, kind of knowing just a little bit about what you do, it's kind of cool to have a conversation and hear all this extra information. So
yeah,
it's thank you for calling. I noticed you brought an entire folder with information about stuff you wanted to talk about. You never even opened it. So
I didn't,
will,
you know,
take that meaning that I did a good job asking.
You did a great job. Yeah, no, we talked about training. We talked about some of our benefits. We have a lot more. If you have questions, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. You know, before that application deadline. And absolutely, like you said, follow our website. We're on social media. We have a Facebook page and we are on Twitter. So you can certainly follow us there. And we always post information about job openings or things that are going on in the community. We have a pretty active public education team. So we'll be hitting out libraries and we go to schools and talk to the kids and teach them about 911. So definitely check us out.
Again, the website is garco911.org. You know, it's interesting. During these interviews, I frequently say, you know, if you have any questions, just feel free to call. I feel like that doesn't really apply to dispatch.
Please don't call 911. That's all I ask. Call 911 if you have an emergency, but otherwise, we do have a non-emergency number, and you're welcome to call that. We can certainly transfer you to an administrative person if you have questions about a job opening.
Okay. So 625-8095 is an okay number to give. Okay.
That is the correct one.
That's the non-emergency number. And actually, I think most non-emergency numbers for police departments and everything go to that number anyway.
They do. Yeah. During business hours, you'll get someone at the police department. And if you're trying to start a call, if you're needing someone to respond out to your home or give you a phone call regarding a crime, they're probably going to transfer you to us. But after hours, all of those numbers will roll directly into us.
Again, that's 625-8095. And obviously, if someone's life is in danger, you know, 911 is the number. And the other thing, Star DUI also goes to 911.
Yes.
I think. Does it go to a separate line or does it go to, wow, that's a whole different subject we could cover,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, there's a couple other ones that will go to other places. Star CSP, 511,
right.
Some of those, they will go to, you know, the closest state patrol dispatch center to where your phone is. And then state patrol will relay information to us if it's not something that they work with. But, you know, we encourage people, if you have an emergency or if you think it's an emergency, call 911. Where you're not ever going to be in trouble for calling 911. We'd rather that you call and have us realize it's not.
Here's something that I imagine some people would want me to ask, by the way. If you call the non-emergency number, does the same GPS information still show up on your screen?
It does not. That's a great question.
Only 911.
Only 911. Okay. The only thing at best that we might get from on the non-emergency line is potentially a phone number from caller ID.
And so in that case, if somebody called a non-emergency number and you did need to find, I mean, what would the process, would it be like back in the old days where you would get the number and then, I mean, would you need a search warrant to try and even locate that phone, or how would that process even begin?
Well, we call it exigent circumstances. So if someone calls from a 911 phone or from a non-emergency line and we are able to determine that there is an emergency, that someone's life is in danger, we have the potential ability to call the phone company and ask them for information. Again, that's entirely dependent on the phone, how much service it has, whether they can get us an accurate location. So there's a lot of factors there. We keep all of our information in that computerized system. So as long as we have access to that, if someone has called before, we can do a search through historical records and maybe find an address or a name or something that gives us at least a starting point.
Something better than just the tower they're connected to.
Absolutely, yeah. Because out here, if we get a phase one phone, it might tell us where the tower is and then say that they're within 60,000 meters in the northwest direction. that's not tremendously helpful. Phase two phones tend to be much better. And we talked about technology. You know, we have Rapid SOS. And it gives us the ability for certain phones to be able to log into a system, put that phone number in if it's called 911, and we can get a much better location. When it first came out, we tested it with the executive director, and we could watch him walk around our building. So
interesting.
There are technologies that are coming that will greatly increase our ability to serve the community. But unfortunately, those kinds of things also take a lot of money. So
I hear that. Again, the website is garco911.org. Sign up for the emergency alerts there. Check the jobs tab. Again, currently there is an opening that taking applications until May 25th.
Yes.
Again, at garco911.org. Gina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I know this doesn't always apply, but I always, you know, when anybody from the police department, fire department comes in, I say, stay safe. So it still seems to apply to a certain extent. And all the best.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon. You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.